John Perryman and I always had a favorite story that over the years we had commented a lot on and talked about. And lo and behold, when I looked at this lesson about Wednesday or Thursday and saw that it was one of my favorite stories, absolutely in the Bible, and it's one that John and I had talked many, many times about, and that's 1 Kings 13. Knowing that everybody studied their lesson this week, I probably don't need to recap the story, but for the one that maybe didn't study real hard, I'll recap the story for you. 1 Kings 13 is a great story. You have to have the setting. Solomon has died, and Solomon's son, Rehoboam, is now the official king. What was Solomon known for? Wisdom and what else? Women and what else? Building the temple. Yes, thank you. And did the temple take a lot of money? Women take a lot of money too. But the temple took more money. See? And so the people were kind of taxed. And so Rehoboam comes to a position of king of Israel. And Jeroboam, one of the leaders, and many of the young men went to Rehoboam and said, whatever you do, cut taxes. Now, I know we never hear about that thing today like that, but whatever you do, cut taxes and give the people a break. Well, Rehoboam had his inner circle, and they said, are you kidding me? We're going to tax them more. And so he laid some heavy taxes. So Jeroboam, he says, all those that don't want to pay taxes, follow me. So he creates Israel, which is now the northern 10 tribes. And Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, is now the king over two tribes, Judah and Benjamin. 1 Kings 13 picks up after the division. Jeroboam says, you know, we got a problem. When the feast days come, where did they go to worship? Jerusalem. When the holy days came, where did they go to worship? And where's Jerusalem located? In the Judah part. So Jeroboam says, can have this. So he decides, number one, he changes some of the feast days. And number two, he's going to have a place in the northern part of the kingdom where they can worship. Now, Jerusalem, of course, had the temple. Well, he knew he wasn't smart enough to figure out how to build a temple. So he goes and he finds two golden calves, and he sets them up in the city, and this is what they're going to use as a symbol of worship in the northern part of Israel. Now, where have we heard of two golden calves before?
Mount Sinai.
Mount Sinai. So, pretty soon, guess what they're actually worshiping? The two golden calves. Now, 1 Kings 13, we pick up our story where we have two prophets. We're going to call one the man of God. We're going to call the second prophet the old prophet. We don't know their names, by the way, which is good because I couldn't pronounce them if we knew them. So we're happy with the man of God prophet and the old prophet. God directs His servant, the man of God, to go up to the worship in Bethel, where the altars are, and he comes and announces in front of the king and everybody that this worship really isn't good, that God is going to split the altar to show that this worship isn't very good. Then he makes a statement that's very interesting. He says, you all are going to mess around, I'm paraphrasing, I'm a great paraphraser. You all are going to mess around, make a mockery of a lot of these things, but someday there's going to be a king named Josiah who will come and set this thing correctly. What a prophecy, because Josiah is way, way down the road.
Three centuries.
That's good to know. See, I like people in here that really know what they're talking about. That's a help. 3 centuries. So as they're worshiping, Jeroboam hears this, and he sticks his hand out and says, basically, get rid of this guy. Because obviously he's very unhappy. Anybody remember what happened to his hand? Dried up, withered, messed up. By the way, has this ever happened before in the children of Israel's history? Can anybody remember anything that happened with a hand? What? Pardon? I can't hear you.
Leprosy,
that's right. Moses is in the wilderness. And you know this story has been passed down for generation to generation to generation. And God has told him, go back to Egypt, tell Pharaoh to let my people go. And Moses says, how do I know you are who you are and who am I supposed to tell them? And of course God tells him, tell him that I am Yahweh. I am Yahweh. And still Moses a little doubting. And so God said, Moses, put your hand in your robe. And when he withdrew his hand, it was full of leprosy. And then he said, Moses, put your hand back in the robe. And when he pulled his hand out, it was absolutely clean. Moses says, I get the picture. So when this king, Jeroboam, points out his hand and it withers, there's certainly a precedent here of what's going to happen. Now, if you're the king and you stick out your hand to curse the prophet and your hand goes haywire on you, what's the natural thing to do? Pardon? Not if you got a withered hand. What's the natural thing to do? What do little children do when they're 5 years old and you catch their hand in the cookie jar? That's right. He says, oops. Remember, we're paraphrasing. Oops. Is there anything you can do? I'm sorry. And his hand turns back to normal. Now, if you were the king and your name was Jeroboam, and this happened to you, and you knew the history very well of how the children of Israel with Moses began their mission, would that get your attention?
Should,
absolutely. So now Jeroboam's very happy. And he says to the prophet, the man of God, tell you what, come over to my house, eat and drink, and let's visit. Now, does anybody remember what the old prophet says? Says, I cannot do that. God has told me that I am to go straight back, and I am to go a different way. Now, if you were looking for instructions, is it too hard to understand that instruction? Don't eat, don't drink, go back straight home, and go a different way. So he leaves. And somewhere along the way, he pauses and he's taking a little rest. And then here comes the old prophet. The old prophet hears about this miraculous story, and his sons comes and tells him, and the old prophet says, "Saddle my donkey, get my things ready, I've got to go talk to him." And so the man of God traveled so slow, and he stopped, that the old man on the donkey finally catches up with him. And he says, "I want you to come to my house, and I want you to eat and drink and visit with me." Now, the man of God says, "What? No can do. God has told me to not eat or drink and go straight home." Now, this conversation in the Bible takes one time. In other references, this goes on for three or four times. And finally, the old man says some magical words, "But I am too a prophet of God, and the angel has been sent to me and has told me for you to come home and eat and drink with me." 1 Kings 13:8. 18.
"The old man said, 'I too am a prophet of the Lord. Just a little while ago, an angel said to me, go and find the man of God and bring him back to your house and give him something to eat.' He kept repeating this to the man of God, but the old man was lying."
All right. But the old man was what?
Lying.
And so, the man of God, the prophet, decides to go home with him. And so they eat, and they drink, and they're visiting. Then all of a sudden, inspiration comes up on the old prophet, and he says, "Oh, you're going to die, and your bones will not be buried with the rest of your family. They're going to be buried somewhere else." And so the man of God prophet, we don't know what he said. He gets up, he starts home, things are going good, till he runs across a lion. The lion kills him, sits there by his carcass. The old man prophet hears of this, says, "Look, what this man prophesied is going to be absolutely correct, and we're going to honor him." So he goes and gets the man of God prophet's bones, and he tells his children, "Bury him in my grave, and when I die, bury me next to him." Fantastic story. Now, what do we learn from this? Pardon?
Don't lie.
We gotta don't lie.
Follow God's word. Don't make compromises. Whatever God says, He means it.
God says it, and He means it.
Obedience.
Oh, did you say obedience? Obedience. What else?
If you have doubts, go back to God and ask Him again.
If you have doubts, go back to God. Okay.
Some people don't tell the truth.
Some people don't tell the truth. Absolutely.
Two prophets of God will not contradict each other.
Two prophets will not contradict each other.
Beware of lying.
Beware of lions.
Okay.
Beware of false prophets. Okay. Well, let's go back and re-examine the story from the beginning and see what in the world we can come up with. Did God want his children, the children of Israel, ever to have a king?
No.
Absolutely not. And why?
He's going to tax you.
Pardon?
He's going to tax you.
Okay.
Take your children.
He wanted to be the king. He wanted them to recognize that he was their king.
Absolutely. How are you going to better God leading you? How are you ever going to better that? So the children of Israel's motivation right from the very beginning wasn't to be what God wanted them to be. It was to be like the other nations. They were called out by God, led through the wilderness, given a land of milk and honey, blessed, blessed, and blessed. But they continually looked around and they said, "We want a king." God, who He is who He is, says, "I don't think that's the best for you. But if you want a king, I will help you." Now, how did they do on the first king they picked? Looked good, stood tall, mighty warrior, no character. Dies killing himself. How did they do on the second king?
Better.
In what way? Absolutely. But boy, is his life spelled out as we've gone over before. Third king, it's interesting when I ask about Solomon, wise, women, and big temple. His life is kind of spelled out. But the children were always wandering away from God. Now, what is to happen to the northern 10 tribes in 722 B.C.? Pardon? Going to be annihilated. Still don't know where they are. Every once in a while you'll see some theological deal on retracing where the lost tribes of Israel are. In 722, they're going to be annihilated by the Assyrian army with the help of Babylon. And by the way, this was all set up when the Babylonians came to see Hezekiah. After, remember, his life was spared. And what did Hezekiah show him? Showed him all of his riches, all of his great wealth, never mentioned God. And they went back and Nebuchadnezzar said, "What about that God down there?" And they said, "Well, we don't know anything about him. But man, let me tell you what they got." And that's where the Babylonians, along with the Assyrians, decided to go in and take what they had. 722, the Assyrians are going to wipe out Israel. 538 is the story with Hezekiah, just in case you're following a timeline. Now, if you're God, and you know what is going to happen eventually, what would you do with your children of Israel? Warn them? Who said warn them? Always like, okay. What else would you do with them? Pardon? Okay. I like warn them. Because that's exactly what God did. He sent Israel the following prophets. Elijah, Elisha, Hosea, Amos, and Obadiah. During that period before they were destroyed, there never was a time that God had a prophet in the children of Israel, the northern kingdoms, that was not there to help guide and bring them back to God. There was not a time. Because that's what God does. Now, Jeroboam is starting the Israel on a big time slide. Changed the feast days, changed the way of worship, changed the golden calves, did all of these things. And God is now beginning to work. So, in this story I just give you from 1 Kings 13, what is the first thing that would come across that would get your attention that God is working and displeased with the children of Israel and their worship? What would that be? Pardon? That, before that. Pardon? Prophet of God going, and what happened to the golden calves in the altar? Split and turned to ashes. Now, if we're all worshiping... Oh, is this picture straight? My goodness, I wouldn't want everybody to go nuts if the picture wasn't straight. If we were worshiping this tree, and all of a sudden it burned up, how powerful is our God? You think that would get somebody's attention? Am I correct? Okay. What's the second sign, Mill? The withered hand. Man, it's not only a miracle there. They understood what that stood for and represented through the story of Moses. Would that get your attention? Absolutely. Now we come to this story with the two prophets. What in the world is that all about? Why did God tell the prophet, don't eat, don't drink, go straight home by a different route? Forget the different route. We're going to come to that in a minute. Why did he tell him not to eat and drink? Pardon? Okay. What else? There is a specific reason, I believe.
He could not honor the idol worship of the land.
He could not what?
He could not honor in any way. And so his...
Absolutely on board. By the very fact that in this particular case, had he gone to Jeroboam's home and sat and dined with them in the customs of the Jews in those days, that would give the house of Jeroboam honor. So God said, I got a work for you to do. You're representing me. I have to get these wayward children's attention. And we're going to show them how stupid their altars are, because they're going to turn to ashes. And if he puts up a fight, I'm going to show him the power as an appeal to him. And I don't want you to associate. I want him to sit and ponder these things. So don't eat, don't drink, go home a different way. Now comes the old man. He hears all of this. He believes all of this. He knows the prophet is true. But for some reason he goes and he says to the man of God prophet, come home, eat. After all, I'm a prophet also. Please understand, he did this several times. It wasn't, well, just come on home. Okay. So, the man of God goes home, suffers his fate. Is this a tremendous lesson on obedience? Okay. What if the man of God went and ate, fast and drank? What had he told Jeroboam he could not do? Couldn't eat, couldn't drink. And where was he supposed to go?
Straight home.
Now, what if he ate and he drank and he went straight home? Nothing happened. How do you think this would have affected Jeroboam? What do you think his rationalization could have been?
God was okay.
Pardon?
God was okay.
Would it have taken away from the credibility of the prophet who said, God has said to me, don't eat, don't drink, go home another way? Would have it taken away from his credibility if he ate and he drank and he went home and nothing happened? Yay or nay?
Yes.
So let's go back up to the beginning. Then why did God tell him not to do that? You see, the story's not about the old man. The story's not about the prophet, the good prophet. The story is about how God is working with His children and He's trying to take away anything that would give them an excuse for sin. When you worship something and God takes it down and reduces it to ashes, what greater appeal could He have? When you, in defiance, say, you know, I really haven't learned a thing from this, kill this guy, and your hand withers, and the man prays and it's healed, what greater appeal can God make? And when He told the man of God, don't eat, don't drink, go home a different way, go straight, and if he had have lived, the rationalization would be, well, sometimes God directs good and sometimes God doesn't direct very good. And the appeal would have been lost to Jeroboam and the king and the children of Israel. Now, let's go to the lion part. There's two things that happen. You tell me what you think, then I'll tell you what I think. So God says to the zookeeper, listen, I've got a disobedient prophet who I'm really mad at, and you let your lion escape, and I'm going to put the two of them together on a road, and I'm going to teach the good prophet, when you disobey, bam! How do you teach your children not to play in the street? Well, let me tell you the best way. How many of you got more than one child? Take the first one, put them out on the freeway on I-35, let them get killed, and I'm telling you, what a great lesson for the other two. Or did God in His infinite wisdom know there's a lion? And He says, don't eat and drink, because I have a message and I do not want that message defiled. And number two, hurry home. Go a different route, because I know what's waiting ahead on one of them. Yes?
I mean, clearly that was strictly punishment for disobedience, because no, the lion did not eat the carcass and he didn't attack So it wasn't obvious. Obviously, it wasn't true.
No. Did he know the line was there, was coming? Now, here's a key question. I want you to think hard. Is the old prophet... No, not the old one. We don't like him. He's a liar. It's the man of God prophet. And I know we don't know. Do you think his salvation was lost over this story?
No.
Oh. What do you think? I believe absolutely not. Look at the people that were denied. What's one of Moses' last recorded acts? Pardon? Struck the stone and said, look what God and I... Wasn't the striking that was bad. Look what God and I have done for you dumb people for 40 years. God and I have taken care of you. Did he reap the transgression of that act? Absolutely. Because his greatest dream would be like any pioneer. His greatest dream was to be the one after the ark crossed the river for him to lead his people. That was taken away from him. Oh, by the way, where is he today? What was David's greatest dream? Did he get to do it? And what does God say of David? Was my friend. Everything he did. How about John the Baptist? His story end up real good. How about Stephen? Stephen was the leader of the seven deacons. He was a powerful speaker. He, as we went through our house church, Stephen played a big role. He could probably have been very dominant. By the way, what happened to old Stephen? Yeah. Could have been the great leader. He was the first one to die. First martyr. The man made a mistake. He did not follow God. No doubt about it. No getting around it. He was swayed. Cost him his life. On this earth... Unless Christ comes, how many of us are going to die? So we're just talking about time. God understands the pain of death on this earth. And for the Combs family and the Williams family and the Doss family, this week he shed some tears. I believe that. As he put his arms. But let me tell you, when God cries is when you face the second death. Because there is no coming back from that one. And everything that God does is not concerned with lengthening life here or taking care of life here. Everything He does is to give you the assurance and the understanding and the longing and the desire to spend eternity with Him. And when He sees His wayward children, He's got to do something. You know, I've learned a lot. Didn't have children growing up, but being having children now, and especially grandchildren, boy, I've learned a lot. And one of the things is when you have a granddaughter that's just doesn't want to listen, you have the ability to plot their life and tell them exactly what's going to happen. Oh, waste of time. You see? But you try. You say, As I said to my 17-year-old, you're going to be pregnant before you're 20. You're not going to have a husband. You're going to be employed. And your life's going to be a mess. And you're not going to be able to take care of you, let alone your son. And now for the last 3 Christmases, she's been unemployed. What a time to figure out how to get fired. You see? God knows that about us. He's not just going to sit back and say, reap it. He had a children of Israel, 10 tribes, that He knew if something did not change, they were going to be utterly destroyed. How hard would you work to get those children's attention? And so the man of God had the right message, did the right thing, but he faltered on his journey. Cost him his life. So what? Proverbs 24:16.
No matter how often an honest man falls, he finds courage to rise again. But when disaster strikes the wicked, they fall in despair.
Okay, the original version, that's a clear word, nothing wrong with it. The original version says, a just man falls 7 times and he gets up. A wicked man falls and he stays down. The old prophet made a mistake. Cost him. But he got up. I believe he got up. There's some passages with patriarchs and prophets, or prophets and kings, that says typically the same thing. Yes, sir?
But I have a question. Why God did not use the old prophet to give message to the king? Why He sent you one from another country if He said that He was
because he lied. God sends the best person He's got with the right message. See, the one thing we don't know, we're not going to speculate, what in the world was the motivation for this old prophet? He certainly went out of his way. He's sitting at home watching TV, remote working real good, and says, settle my donkey and let me go out here and tell this guy come home and eat to me. And I mean, what in the world was this guy's motivation? I don't know. Doesn't say. Can't speculate. But at the end, he said this man was just because his prophecies will come true, and I have enough respect for him that bury his bones in my grave and bury me next to those bones. I don't know. So I can't speculate what his motivation was. I certainly will speculate and have to speculate on what God's motivation is. Because he didn't want his children to go down that slope. A person falls 7 times. Thank God he gets up. The wicked man stays down. Yes?
Isn't there another lesson there for us too about, because this was also a man of God, the old prophet. And the man of God prophet listened to him and believed his lies, and it cost him his life. Well, maybe that's a lesson for us, and we better study the Bible because we have people within our own church who sometimes have new light that isn't right.
Nothing wrong with new light. I would hope there's new light.
I would hope so too, but I say we have to be careful and study the Bible to make sure that the new light is the same as the Bible.
Yeah. See? When you know God and you look at God as your source and as your inspiration, then you always go back and check with Him. And that's where the good prophet made his mistake. He started out by saying, no, I can't do that. Well, look, I'm a prophet also. You see, when in doubt, go to God. When in doubt, go to God. Now, there's all kinds of implications. One, if you disobey, look what happens. I particularly reject that one because, man, we all disobey. We all fall. Now, I always like it when the Bible kind of backs up, James, what I say. Always makes me feel good, you know. So, remember, Jeroboam has three witnesses in his life. Number one, the altars that he had built keep people from going to Jerusalem are now in ashes. Number two, his hand withered in front of everybody is now healed by the prophet of God. Number three sign is the very man who said, I can't eat, I can't drink. God has told me to go straight home. Violates that. And now a lion has killed him. All this gets back to Jeroboam and he starts putting it together. Let's see. Verse 33 and 34.
But after Jeroboam heard what had happened to the prophet from Judah, he did not change his ways. He appointed more priests from the common people to serve at various places of idol worship. All anyone had to do to become a priest was to volunteer. This is what brought an end to the royal house of Jeroboam and led to its downfall. Eventually, his whole family was cut off and disappeared from the face of the earth.
And God turns to the universe. Remember, Paul tells us we are a spectacle to the universe. The universe is watching this. And God turns to the universe and says, when it comes to Rehoboam, when it comes to his family, what else could I do? And the universe says, nothing. In the kingdom, I believe, the old good prophet will say, I understand. I understand why that lion did what it did. You see, there's a big picture. There's a conflict out there. God wants us to use us. Sometimes it's not the way that we think. Sometimes it's not what we want. But when we get to the kingdom, we're told that as we see the end from the beginning, we wouldn't change a thing. What a promise. I work on that promise every week, trying to understand it more and more. But I accept it for what it is. Father in heaven, we've probably gone down some paths where the whole path was flooded with lions. But for some reason, You've protected us. We know one thing. You loved your children of Israel and you did what you could do to say, don't you see who I am? Father, help us to see who you are. Help us throughout this week and in this season to understand how much you love us and you care for us. And yes, you love obedience, but you like that relationship where we talk with you and we do things right simply because they're the right thing to do. Bless this class. Bless the Combs family, the Williams family, the Doss family, and other people that are hurting today is my prayer. In Jesus' name, amen.